Lovely to be with you again. One more little look at one of these characters of faith from the Old Testament. I'm going to read from Psalm 46. Some of you will know this psalm. I won't read all of it. God is our refuge and strength, an ever-present help in trouble. Therefore, we will not fear though the earth give way and the mountains fall into the heart of the sea, though its waters roar and foam and the mountains quake with their surging. There is a river whose streams make glad the city of God, the holy place where the Most High dwells. God is within her. She will not fall. God will help her at break of day. Nations are in uproar. Kingdoms fall. He lifts his voice. The earth melts. The Lord Almighty is with us. The God of Jacob is our fortress. Psalm 46 really is a psalm of confidence in God when trouble comes. It was written, I think, to be sung in the temple, probably at the time of the exile to Babylon. Some suggest it was written as a song of deliverance after Jerusalem was saved from the Assyrian king Sennacherib. And it's a lovely psalm. It's a psalm I go to often. Actually, a bit of nonsense for you. Some people call it Shakespeare's psalm. The reason behind that was that apparently Shakespeare was 46, this is Psalm 46, Shakespeare was 46 at the time when the King James Bible was translated, and it was said he was a very dear friend of King James, and as it happens, the 46th word in the psalm is shake. And the 46th word from the end of the psalm is spear. So, Shakespeare's psalm. But my question this morning for you is this. Why, and it's not just in this psalm, happens very, very often throughout the Tanakh, throughout the Old Testament. Why use this phrase, the God of Jacob? I mean, I could understand if it was the God of David, couldn't you? The greatest king Israel ever had, the shepherd king, the apple of God's eye. I could understand if it was the God of Moses, the great general, the strong leader, the deliverer of God's people from captivity. I could understand if it was the God of Elijah, the fiery prophet, the miracle worker, defender of God's truth. But the God of Jacob, excuse me? And with the greatest respect to any Jewish people, if you're here today, because this is one of your patriarchs, Jacob was selfish, he was scheming, he was treacherous, he was deceitful, he was untruthful. And so often the Bible calls the Almighty God the God of Jacob. Now, I don't know how you think about that. I just think it's delightful. I think it's wonderful. And let me just give you an overview this morning of Jacob. Because he is mentioned in that list of people of faith, and we'll come to this at the end, in Hebrews chapter 11. But he was quite a character. Let me just list some things about Jacob. Number one, he had a difficult birth. You remember the story, we won't read it all today. Isaac and Rebekah had been married for 20 years with no children. So you might expect much heartache and regrets. and recrimination there. And finally, when Rebekah is pregnant with twin boys, the Bible says the babies jostled each other within her womb. Actually, the Hebrew word translated jostled is really much stronger than that. It has the idea of struggling together, fighting each other, bruising, crushing, or breaking into pieces. They were really going at each other. Now, I've got five brothers, because I've got an adopted brother. So I know what boys do to each other. We fight. Actually, my eldest brother pulled me out of the lake once, so sometimes they do good things. But I have to tell you that one of my other brothers had pushed me in. And when they're born, the babies were born after fighting each other within the womb, Esau first, and then Jacob, and Jacob is born still clutching hold of his brother's heel. He's still holding on to him, still wanting to fight. And he was named Yaakov, Jacob, the supplanter. That is literally the one who takes another's place by treachery. Figuratively, the cheat or the deceit. Fancy having a name like the cheat. You know, how would you get on in school? You know, in Genesis, but he was rightly named, as so often biblical names are prophetic. In Genesis 27:36, Esau says, "Isn't he right?" This is his big brother. He says, "Isn't he rightly named Jacob? For he has deceived me these two times." And it wasn't a great start in life. And so this is my thought this morning. So what if the circumstances of your birth were not so good? Many people are born out of family strife or into poverty or rejection. Well, I think that if the Lord of hosts was the God of Jacob, then he can be your God too. Number one, he had a difficult birth. Number two, he had an unhappy childhood. Now, we don't know all the details, and maybe I'm reading in a little, but what we do know would suggest that this was a family divided down the middle. Actually, a family divided among itself. Esau, twin brother, was a skillful hunter, we know. He was described as a man of the open country. He was the outgoing sort. His two names, Esau and Edom, mean hairy, because he was a hairy sort of a guy, and red. So this he went through life called Hairy Red. So Hairy Red and Cheat. Great couple of kids here. And Hairy Red was Dad's favourite, and Cheat, because he was the butch man, the brave, the fine, you know, the hunter. And Cheat was Mum's favourite. He was the quiet guy. The Bible simply says he stayed among the tents. You get the impression he liked hanging around the home, probably doing a spot of cooking or housework or ironing or something, I don't know. Certainly we know that he was Mum's favourite and Hairy Red was Dad's favourite. That doesn't work well, does it, in a family? When you have two children and and one's mum's favourite and one's dad. Can you imagine the family? This is not a happy childhood. This is not a family in harmony. And in addition, of course, Rebecca, mum, had received a prophetic word from the Lord even before the babies were born, that both would father great nations, but that the older, Esau, would serve the younger, Jacob. So now, as they grow up, she and Jacob, her favourite, scheme to make this happen. Firstly, by tricking Esau out of his birthright, the right of the firstborn, by selling him some stew when he was hungry. And then Rebecca and Jacob deceiving Isaac, dad, with the old goatskin on the arms trick to give him the blessing of the firstborn. You know the story. It wasn't great. Actually, I'm not entirely convinced that Isaac the father was totally without blame in that incident, because it seems that he had planned to give his blessing to Esau much earlier than would be usual. The blessing of the firstborn, of course, would usually be given on the deathbed. But as we know, Isaac lived for at least another 20 years. So why was he trying to give his blessing to the firstborn early? Was it that he knew that he was going blind? Was it that he didn't trust his wife and Jacob? I don't know. What I do believe is that this was not a happy family. Look, some of us have childhoods that were not so good. One of the things Patsy and my wife and I discovered working with LL Ministries over the years is that many of our problems stem back from into childhood. And what if you grew up in a family with discord? What if your parents were at odds with each other or got divorced? What if you had to strive to be accepted? Does that fit with anyone? I just think this, that if the Lord of hosts was the God of Jacob, then he can be your God too. Number three, how's this working for you this morning? Is it all right? Number three, he had a wasted youth. He's not doing too well, is he, so far? See, now Jacob was scared that Esau was going to kill him because he'd pinched his birthright, and he runs away to his uncle in Haran, many, many hundreds of miles away, to the eastern peoples. Plainly, he doesn't believe the prophecy that had been given to his mother, or, incidentally, God's confirmation of that prophecy that was given to him when he was at a place called Bethel. Remember when he was on his way out of that country and he stops on the border or near the border at a place called Bethel down in the south, and he has that dream. Do you remember? Do you remember when he sees the angels going up and down the ladder? We call it Jacob's ladder, don't we? You can find the story in Genesis 28. God actually repeats to him in his dream the fact that he would be the great nation, and that the promise to Abraham, his ancestor, would come down through him and everything. Plainly, he doesn't believe it then. Actually, he even says to God that God isn't his God at that time. Did you notice that? Read it in the story. What he says to him, he says, if you'll look after me, God, when I go away and bring me back safe, then you can be my God. But up till now, it looks like he didn't even acknowledge that the Lord of hosts was his God. Interestingly, I don't know if you know, the Jewish scholars have an understanding of what was happening when Jacob saw the angels going up and down the ladder. Because they say this was actually God's chosen man, although he was far from seeming to be at this time, that God had, a bit like he did with Elisha later, God had put angels around him to look after him. But as he leaves the country where God had placed him and which was going to be his inheritance, actually what happened is that those angels left him and there was effectively the changing of the guard. And God says, I can't leave these angels with you now because they're the angels of this land. But I will give you some others to go with you. And so he changes the guard and the angels go up and some more come down. Interesting thought, isn't it? It does kind of make sense because many, many years later, probably 20 years later, when he eventually came back into that country, you can read it in Genesis 32. It reads like this, and the angels of the Lord met him again as he came back. So... Was that me? So was it a happy... That woke you up, didn't it? Yeah. So was it a happy, productive stay with jolly Uncle Laban in Haran? Actually, Uncle Laban proved to be every bit as tricky and deceitful, didn't he? As Jacob himself... Perhaps there's what we might call generational treachery that ran in this family. And Jacob agrees to work for 7 years for Laban's daughter, Rachel. Do you remember the story? He sees this beautiful girl, says, I'd like her for my wife. And Uncle Laban says, oh, that'll be all right. Work for 7 years and you can have her as your wife. So he works for 7 years. And then I don't quite know how this works, but somehow he ended up with the wrong woman and gets a sister instead. And then he has to work another 7 years. It seems Jacob had to work for his uncle for at least 20 years. And during that time, the Bible says 10 times his wages were reduced. Bit like what's happening today, isn't it, with some of us? And all of the losses in the flock came out of his wages. Yes, Uncle Laban was a tricky character. I suspect myself all this time he was not where God had wanted him to be. So what of us? What if we've wasted years? Any of you done that? Or is it just me? What if you've spent too much time away from where God had wanted you to be? I just think that if the Lord of hosts was the God of Jacob, then he can be your God too. Number four, he had a dysfunctional marriage. Well, we could say marriages, really. 11 sons born to this guy. 4 were born out of rejection. 4 were born out of competition with the two wives going at each other and slave girls being brought in. Two were effectively bought by one of the wives from the other. And only one was born to the woman Jacob loved. Is it any wonder Joseph was later so hated by his brothers? I don't know if you can imagine what lunch or dinner would be like around this table with this family. Happy families. So what if your relationships haven't worked out as you'd hoped they would? What if you make the wrong choices along the way? Does God reject you? I just think, if the Lord of hosts can be the God of Jacob, then can't he be your God too? Number five, he had a suspect belief system. See, when Jacob eventually decided to go home from Uncle Laban's place, he agreed with tricky old uncle that he would only take with him as his wages the speckled, do you remember the story, the speckled sheep and goats. He says, I'll only take the ones that are a bit striped or spotted or speckled. There are not many of them. And actually the Lord had shown him in a dream what was going to happen. And the Lord had shown him that when all of the female sheep and goats were going to come down to drink, it was they would just be mating with the speckled ones, the speckled males. And this was pure genetics. Of course, Jacob didn't know much about genetics, I suppose. And it looks like Jacob then resorted to a kind of a sorcery. I don't know what his belief system was at the time or what he was up to, but he cuts all kinds of trees down from the forest, and he strips the bark off and he puts it down in front of them so that when they come down and mate, there's all these bits of wood everywhere. And it just looks like sorcery, like a kind of a witchcraft. And then when they eventually leave, Jacob's wife, Rachel, his special wife, had stolen the family gods, the idols, and hidden them up her skirts. This doesn't look like a man of faith, does it? Someone trusting in God. And so I say, what if your beliefs have sometimes been faulty? What if you've sometimes got things wrong or way wrong? What if your faith has not been as it should be? And I just think, if the Lord of hosts could be the God of Jacob, then he can be your God too. Number six, he had a humiliating homecoming. It's not a great story, Jacob, is it? Do you know the story of when he eventually gets back? He's still afraid of his brother, thinks he's going to kill him. And he knew he had to go home eventually. And anyway, it was no good being with Uncle Laban and all that abuse. So eventually he does go home, but he's still full of fears. Perhaps there is some justification in that, because he hears that Hairy Red is on his way out to meet him with, not with a bunch of flowers, but with 400 men. And Jacob schemes it all out again and divides all his families into three groups. And he sends the servant wives with their children up ahead with some of the herds and flocks and presents. And he said they can meet Esau first. And then he's in as a next group when he's got Leah, his least favourite wife, with her children. And he sends her up next with some more sheep and goats and presents to try and appease Hairy Red. And finally he sends Rachel, his favourite wife, and Joseph with some more presents. And guess where he is? Coming last. Oh, good. You're brave. What a humiliating homecoming. And then this strange incident as Jacob wrestles all night long with someone the Bible describes as a man. Of course, it wasn't a man. It was the Lord himself. And actually, if you think about the story of Jacob, he'd been wrestling with the Lord all his life and with his family and probably with everybody you met. And the Lord wrestles with him and calls him to speak out his name. I don't know why you think, why would God want him to speak out his name? He says, what is your name? But of course, Jacob's name was not just his name, it was, and actually this is a very Hebrew thing, that the name is who you are. And Jacob doesn't say, I'm called Jacob. What he says is, of course, is, I am Jacob. In other words, I am the treacherous, selfish, scheming, deceitful, untruthful, supplanting, perhaps for the first time ever, he admitted who he was, who he really was. It's a great thing to do before God, you know. Admit what you're like and who you are. That we're just all sinners before him. And the Lord did two things for Jacob that day. One, he wrenched his hip out of joint so that he now couldn't walk properly and was an invalid. Now, you see, he couldn't run away from Esau. Now he couldn't do it on his own like he'd tried to all his life. Now, perhaps for the first time ever, he was going to have to trust God. Now, perhaps for the first time, he would put his faith in God. And the other thing that the Lord did for him that day was he changed his name. Actually, of course, he didn't just change his name. He changed who he was from the inside out. Now he was no longer going to be the scheming cheat, but trusting in God, his name would be Israel, which is Prince with God. So what if you and I have fears and doubts? What if you and I are still trying to work everything out our own way, as Jacob did? What if we're still striving to do things in our own strength? I just think that if the Lord of hosts can be the God of Jacob, then he can be your God too. Perhaps I've been too hard on Jacob this morning. You must judge. But he does give me so much hope, so much encouragement, that if God could want this man, God could keep his hand on this man, God could bring this man eventually to himself. And how does the New Testament sum up Jacob in that great list of deeds of faith of men and women in Hebrews 11. Let me read it to you, Hebrews 11, 21. It says this: by faith, Jacob, when he was dying, blessed each of Joseph's sons and worshipped as he leaned on the top of his staff.
What? Is that it? No great deeds? No parting of seas? No saving nations? No killing of enemies? He just blessed his two sons and worshipped leaning on his staff. What kind of faith is that? I don't know if you know the story of him blessing Joseph's sons. When Jacob was dying, Joseph, his favorite son, brings his own two boys to him to be blessed. And Jacob wants to give a kind of a double blessing to Joseph, so he's going to bless the two boys instead, his grandsons. And Joseph brings his two boys in to Jacob to bless them. And the tradition, of course, is that the eldest has the right hand put on their head and for the blessing of the firstborn. And so he carefully brings his two sons to Jacob, and he positions them in such a way that Jacob is going to put his right hand on the oldest and his left hand on the youngest. And as he brings them forward, Jacob does this. He crosses his hands. And Joseph goes, "No, no, no, Father, no, no, this is the oldest, this is the youngest, you got it wrong." And Jacob says, "No, I haven't. Because the blessing of the firstborn is going to be on the younger." And I wonder, as he did so, did he remember all those years ago when he had schemed to have his father give him the blessing that should have... Do you hear what I'm saying? And whether he thought to himself, "Oh no, why didn't I leave it to God?" Because now this was by faith. And then he worshipped, leaning on his staff. Still got a limp, you see. Hip still troubling him all those years. Still having to trust God and not himself. I just love Jacob. And I think he's a bit of a plonker in some ways, but I just love him because, you know, he got everything wrong. God never let him go. And eventually God brings him. Where? To faith. So why the phrase, "the God of Jacob"? This is the God who chooses the unlikely. This is the God who shows grace to the wayward. This is the God who has infinite patience with the striver. This is the God who changes the heart of the sinner. And this is the God who just wants us to trust him forever. And this is my God. And I think he wants to be yours too. Lord bless you.